is a Momentum Media production.
Investing insights with Right Property Group, exploring trends in real estate and helping property investors gain financial security.
G'day, how you going? Phil Tarrant, co-host, Investing Insights at Right Property Group. Welcome, how you going? Tuning in wherever you are, probably across the YouTube and all the other channels and on the Property Investment Podcast Network and also direct on Investing Insights Right Property Group. It is the show that is everywhere. It's been going, who would have thought, for 6 years. We're entering season 7, Investing Insights Right Property Group. 7 years we've been, well, 6 and a bit years we've been doing this and trying to navigate and steer conversations, insights, anecdotes, directions of Property Investment Australia. So season 7, we enter the season a very different sense of previous years, and I'm going to look forward to navigating, steering this conversation with my colleagues, Steve Waters and Victor Kumar from Right Property Group, over the 12 months ahead of us. And I think it's probably going to be a formative time, we always say, in property investment, but Jesus, the market is well over the joint at the moment. We'll try and give some sense of that and many other things. Steve, Victor, how are you going?
Good. We've been around for more than most prime ministers in Australia for this.
We have done. Yeah. I don't know how many PMs we've seen.
A fair few.
Yeah. So, well, where I've been living for the last number of years, started off with Howard, Rudd, Gillard, Rudd, Turnbull. Is it Turnbull?
Yeah, Turnbull.
So you know what everyone's doing right now is they're saying, okay, so where are all these prime ministers? Where did they live?
Turnbull, Abbott, ScoMo.
Mm-hmm. Tarrant.
And now Albo, our good friend Albo. We'll get him on the podcast at some point. He cares about affordable housing, I hear.
Well, apparently so.
Yeah.
Maybe you should get the leader of the Greens as well.
Yeah, I'm sure property investors will be really interesting to see what they've got to say. Very popular in the property investing community, the Greens.
It'd make for a great podcast. I'd be willing to be on that panel.
Would you?
Absolutely.
And what would you say?
Facts and figures.
Whatever came to my mind.
You'd be hugging a tree somewhere, wouldn't you?
No.
I can see you're chained to a tree, the Dane tree, saying stop the mining, right? Stop the cutting the logs. That's for you, wouldn't it, Steve?
Well, very much so. I don't know. You've seen the videos. But I think it'd make for a great debate. Unfortunately, I think their grasp on reality, when we really look at it, just isn't there. They live in this cocooned life of how things should be, but that's not reality.
Yeah,
anyway, I'll get off that soapbox right now. We've only just started for season 7.
Nah, soapbox is good. My soapbox moment for this week.
Yeah.
Yellow tongue.
Grooving, as in?
Yellow tongue flooring.
Flooring, yeah.
Yeah. Used to be 900 millimetres wide. Now it's 800 millimetres wide.
Geez, that's a first world problem. I don't know how you sleep at night with that.
Mate, you know how bad it is?
Must be.
You know how bad it is? You think about it. Like, so it still costs the same amount as what it used to. They're taking 100 mil off it, right? And now your yellow tongue doesn't fit on a pallet racking, right? But they've said, this is my beef for the week. Beef for the week is how we should start every show of season 7. Beef for the week is that same price, they've gone, oh, no, we've changed it for builders because it fits in better. Everyone hates it. All builders are angry that yellow tongue is down 800 millimetres rather than 900 millimetres.
Well,
same price.
It's like
same
the Big
price,
Mac.
So you've got to pay a lot more.
It's like the Big Mac. It's now the medium Mac.
It's the medium Mac.
Right, that's inflation.
Mm.
And you're at the pointy end of it. What are you building with yellow tongue flooring?
Oh, just some pallet racking I need to put some shelves in. But now it doesn't fit properly, right? Like it's because, you know, like your blue and orange pallet racking, right? The width of the edges of the two beams is about 850 mil. So you need 900 mil yellow tongue to go into it. But they changed everything.
Geez, that must hurt.
Beef for the week. Beef for the week.
Beef for the week. Maybe we should start the podcast every single time with a beef of the week.
What's your beef of the week, Steve?
My beef for the week.
Yeah. Beef of the week or beef for the week? Beef of the week.
My beef of the week is the inconsistency in data reporting.
Okay. That's a beef of the
That's it.
Explain.
Well, I just think that everybody's interpretation of the data is a little different and therefore policy is made on the fly in regards to that. And I don't think that if people had the ability and the time to actually sit back and I guess look at it from a data point of view, but then also from reality, so from a ground truth as we often refer to it as, maybe some of the policy could be quite different.
Okay.
So that's my beef of the week.
Vic, you got one? I know you.
I'm more simple, mate. Yeah. It's taken me 2 hours to get to this studio, and that's my beef.
That's fair enough. Which is probably extrapolates out into
which freeway did you drive?
Poor planning. Poor planning and infrastructure development. It's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse, mate.
Absolutely, it will. And yes, with the push for higher density closer to the city and the middle ring, I think it will make it worse because we haven't planned for the infrastructure to take this level of pressure. And if it does, we normally put the highways and freeways in afterwards, which creates 4 or 5 years of chaotic driving in that area.
Do you know what I've got a lot of beefs of the week.
You're just a grumpy old man.
I am. Someone is just angry
at the sky, Phil Tarrant,
right?
This is Phil Tarrant, the corned beef man.
The corned beef man.
Mm-hmm.
Explain, corned beef man.
Corned beef man.
I've got a beef. Oh, yeah, there you go. Right. Proudly sponsored by Spam. I do like a Spam sandwich, by the way.
There's that Kuma Huma.
A joke's not a good joke when you have to explain it.
I've never thought of that before. That's pretty good. Huma. Why? I've got to ask you this question. It's probably related. Why is there industrial sites being built everywhere at the moment? Everywhere. Everywhere I turn. Like out of Sydney, sort of in more regional, the Central Coast, Newcastle, those areas. Every single highway junction, there's a massive industrial centre going in. Why? Things are changing. Something's up.
Utilisation of different land that perhaps is not suitable for residential dwellings is the short story. And I guess it's a little bit further out on the freeway hubs or the infrastructure hubs, transport hubs, I should say.
Transport hubs.
Yeah. And it's a necessity. But I get to where you're going to. With that. Like if they can do that for industrial land and get it through quite easily, why can't they do that for residential? To help clearly the supply problem.
Yeah.
Rather than this build to rent potential slums.
Which is where it may go.
Could do.
So this goes back to the point where we started this sort of future housing funds and, you know, affordable housing, making affordable housing. So you guys got reservations, concerns around that? Or do you think it's good?
For
just politically, you know, the idea of all these dollars getting thrown at affordable housing, like who's going to win off that? Is it going to be
developers?
Johnny Punch Clock, or is it going to be someone else going to make other way in?
Well, it's the corporate developers, right? The larger developers that will benefit from that.
Yeah. I think it's a more sophisticated version of the Pink Bat scheme back with Kevin 07. I think there's going to be a lot of rorting in that, and there'll be some people that make some pretty good dollars out of it, but the end result I don't think will solve the problem. Because if we look at the affordable housing and the government contributions to that, they haven't contributed squiddly dot over the last realistically 30 to 40 years. And when you look at the percentage of government expenditure or government supplied housing versus, we'll call it corporate versus
private.
Like they're 2%.
Yeah.
It's nothing in the scheme of things. So this is mainly more of a catch up. And I think their philosophy is, well, we can, if we get corporate in, we can build it bigger, better, faster, harder and supply that accommodation in a shorter period of time. And that's not the answer to the problem.
See, what I have struggled with understanding about what is affordable housing? So a house is a house. If a house is in a suburb where three-bedroom units in this suburb go for $600,000 and they build affordable housing in that same suburb and it's three bedrooms, shouldn't it also be $600,000? Like
subsidized.
So it's structurally, it's going to be structurally affordable, even though it's the same product, right? So it means that it's going to be harder to get mortgages on it. It's going to be harder to get this, that, and the other. Do you think investors will start touching that, or just be like structurally difficult to get in and out of? Probably easy to get in, hard to get out of.
I think it'll be easier. There'll be a point in time where it will be easier to get into on the sale. When I say sale, on the theoretical upside of what this is, because there'll be subsidies in and around it, right? From an actual building structural cost, it'll probably be more expensive than the same one right next to it done by, you know, the private investor or the house and land package specialist. But make no mistake, people aren't going into this. Corporations aren't, big business isn't going into these, you know, built to rent or affordable housing, whatever you want to tag it, to lose money. Like this is a way for them to make
accelerate
money.
Earning potential, yeah.
Yeah. And so who's going to pay for that?
Yeah.
The government is going to subsidize them, whether it be state, federal,
local. So the Australian taxpayer.
So ultimately it'll be us
who
pays for it.
So property investors pay twice. They pay the taxes to go over there to underwrite the cost of this, that, and the other.
Could be. You could think of it that way.
That's what a cynic would say, of which I am not.
Of course you aren't.
But Mr. Kumar, the Kumar Humor.
It's an ongoing joke in our office.
Is it? Is he ever funny, or is it just always?
It's just that my humor is way sophisticated for Steve's understanding.
Okay. Mm. But you'd have numerous universities.
And everybody else.
Yeah. Don't worry, I can catch up. I can stay sort of caught up. Anyways, season seven. Seventh season. We've been doing this right through the COVID pandemic. Are we out of it now? We're out of COVID pandemic? We're in the hangover of the COVID pandemic, aren't we?
Apparently so.
I reckon there's a huge wave of COVID going through right now.
I know a lot of people that have had the, whatever it is, 12th wave, 12th round of infections.
Of the COVID.
Yeah. I'm yet to have it, touch wood.
Yeah. You've got to leave your house to get it, Steve. You've got to do something in
life.
Leave the cocoon.
I know. I'll probably get it today.
Probably.
Associating with the zesty people like yourself with the eastern suburbs. No, look, I think the COVID ramifications are still there. I mean, that's what the interest rates are about, right?
Yeah. That's it. This
inflation.
Is the hangover. This is inflation.
Correct.
This
is the and it'll be there for some time.
And this is like, you know, we'll sort of try and dissect it a little bit today, just this market we're in right now. But I think Victor set us up for season seven of Investing Insights for Rye Property Group. We're all pragmatists and realists, but also optimists when it comes to property. Over the last six seasons, we haven't been sort of the merchants of doom and gloom. We've been very measured in our commentary and said, like, just everyone relax. This is the way it's going to work. And I think we've largely got it right. You guys have largely got it right. But I think the market we're moving into right now is going to be one of those real tumultuous periods of real estate in Australia. And no doubt you guys are looking towards it as a positive, as in the opportunities in the market rather than the negatives. However, you're conscious of what those challenging fragmented issues that are shaping property investing moving forward in real estate markets. So I think to set us up for this season, you know, to give us an understanding of your guys' baseline philosophy about sort of future focused investing. Yeah, you know, what is it we're looking towards tomorrow? Where to put your money today to get the best capital growth investment opportunities into the future is future focus. So no doubt this is sort of like something you're embracing as an organization and supporting your clients around it, rather than sort of going, if you focus on what's going on today, you're not going to realize the opportunities tomorrow. You're going to make the wrong decisions today to realize the opportunities tomorrow. So give me some sense for how you guys are seeing things right now, being future focused in your investing capability.
Sure. And if you look at any market phase, there are always opportunities. There's always setbacks. And we need to identify those first. And also, investing is largely about psychology. It's not necessarily about reacting to media, reacting to the news of the day. Mm. If you did that, you would lose a lot of money. I mean, those years ago when a certain someone came to Australia and said, you know, we're going to have 40% decrease in prices.
Well, they're saying that again now, right? Yeah. The bubble's about to burst.
That's right. And a lot of people that hang on to that news without looking at all of the periphery of what actually creates this market, did end up selling. And when they did, they've lost all of the phenomenal gains we've seen since then. Now, did we see the gains throughout? Absolutely not. We had times where properties went down. We had times where properties went sideways. We had times where it was harder to get into the market because of finance. And there were times where it was super easy to get in the market. And all of them brought its own problems if you looked at it from right here, right now, as opposed to what am I trying to achieve, which then guides you towards the right strategy. And then what is, talking about affordability, what is my personal affordability? So do I invest in a more negative cash flow, higher growth property or a cheaper property? Because there's two aspects to affordability, the capital that you've got to play with, and the ongoing cash flow you've got to play with without impacting significantly lifestyle, so without taking a step back in lifestyle. And the important thing that Steve and I want to flag is that investing really should happen in the background. Life and lifestyle should happen in the forefront within reason, but investing should happen in the background. The minute you bring investing right to the forefront, you will make mistakes. You will start focusing on the right here, right now, as opposed to playing the long game.
And the long game is what?
The long game is buying.
So you've got to keep your eye on the prize, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You have to. But keeping it real, right? Not taking into account to say that, you know what, it'll be all right. You need to do your sums. You need to go right down to, yes, Jack down here bought a property in Brisbane. Does that suit me? And bring it right down to yourself and your own household budget. And so that means that there is a whole lot of pre-planning that needs to happen. Most people jump into the market, buying the property, and then they try and solve all of the other moving parts as to the reason why.
Mm.
You need to have the why sorted out first and then the how and the where.
So how tough is the market right now, Steve? Give me a sense for it, because everyone's talking about it. It is the dinner party conversation, which has always been amplified. Everyone's complaining about their mortgage rates. Everyone's under stress. Everyone's under pressure. You've got a lot of people out there on the social media, you know, shaking their fists at the RBA, the governor, for tricking Australians, you know, into thinking that it won't be rate rises. Everyone's over-leveraged. Everyone's going poor, crying poor. Mm. Is that just one lens?
I think predominantly it is one lens, but just picking up on a comment you made there where the RBA governor tricked us into thinking that there was going to be an extended time of low rates. That comment itself would infer that there was intent by him. And I think all of us here know that there was no intent. There was no deliberate commentary to, I guess, steer the economy into a position where it is today.
Yeah.
You know, he had the facts, the figures, perhaps he interpreted them incorrectly.
Because he had that sort of data in front of him at that point.
It's a data problem.
There's the beef of the week.
Beef of the week.
But I think, how tough is the market? Well, it depends. There are some parts of the market around the country that are doing it tough.
Mm.
There are others that are still quite explosive, and I use that word deliberately. So I think it depends where you are, what your budget is, or what the potential price bracket of that, or what the price bracket of that area is, and what its own affordability metrics is. To the greater draw, I guess. So, debt to income ratios. Now, having said that, you would think that because there's an affordability issue in, say, Sydney, as an example, that the market should be reducing, even capitulating. But clearly over the last quarter, it hasn't done that.
Yeah, it's been growing.
It's been growing. And look, to be honest, it surprised me. I thought that we'd see the bottom in the beginning of Q3. Mm. That's where I thought Sydney's bottom would be, but it was really, at the end of Q1.
Yeah.
When
so saying Q3, you're talking about like you thought it would be happening in July, August, September.
Correct.
Yeah.
But there's been definite growth. Mm. And there's been up to 10% growth in some regions of Sydney. And then there's been some sideways movements in others, and small amounts of growth in others. Throughout the rest of the country, though, there's also been, I'll call it a rebound from sideways movement in other markets, which is now starting to grow again for the right reasons.
Mm.
And there are other parts of the country that haven't stopped growing. Sure, the rate of growth has slowed, but it's still growing.
Yeah.
And if you annualise that out, some of those regions are double digit, which is above the average. But the tough part of the market, I think, is, and I don't want to be alarmist here, but I believe there'll be parts of the country, only parts, that you'll start to see a flurry of listings probably in the next
couple of months.
Yeah, so, 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah. I think you're gonna see it. We know from speaking with hundreds of agents across the country on a weekly basis that the story is quite diverse. Their commentary, their opinions is quite, they're polar opposite, literally. There are parts of Sydney where we speak to some of the agents where over the last 2 weeks to 3 weeks, the phone has rung hot in terms of, I might need to sell my property. However, that would seem that there's going to be quite a steep reduction in asset value. But what they're all saying is there's enough buyers out there to pick up that slack, to put the floor in the market,
which ensures stability, supply and demand, basic stuff. So stability in markets, conditions. Yeah.
Correct. But it still does fly in the face of, I guess, what is fundamentally driven markets in and around affordability and all the other metrics and so on.
Mm.
But it has a real affordability problems, parts of the market throughout the country. So what's underpinning it? It's economics 101. It's just supply and demand.
Yeah.
At the moment, we all know what's around the corner.
Mm.
Like we all do. We just don't know when that corner is going to be there.
So what's around the corner?
I think there's going to be a pretty good period of growth.
Okay. So that's – people are going, well, huh?
I think future most people know that.
So future-focused investing, right? So what do property investors want, Vic?
They want growth, right? They want returns, right? Yeah. Yield. Yeah. So ease of holding onto the property. But if I latch onto your comment, Steve, of, you know, in the next, say, 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to have a large number of properties hitting the market. So let's see what...
And that's good for real estate agents. It is good for real estate agents. Because real estate agents make money through transactions.
Absolutely.
Whether stuff's like goes for $710,000, $700,000, doesn't mean a lot to the agent. They just want to sell lots of $700,000 properties.
But the listing, sorry, just to interrupt for 1 second and jump onto your point. It's good for the real estate agents as long as there's plenty of listings, as long as that market is liquid.
Yeah.
So they've still got to transact. Yeah, you don't want this sort of ever-growing stock on listings. Market yeah. that's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Then they don't make money.
Yeah.
So if you come back to what's really going to happen in the market, right? So we're recording this in June and 30th of June, end of financial year. A lot of people hold off in the initial months and the final initial weeks and the final weeks of May.
Yeah.
Through accountant's advice and general knowledge to say, if I get it exchanged, if I get my property exchanged in the new financial year, then my capital gains tax gets deferred into the new financial year as well, right? So there's a natural hiatus around this time.
Mm.
And so we're likely to see a flurry of listings come in come July. Then you've got the so-called mortgage cliff that's happening. But also more importantly, people start sitting in front of the accountants and a lot of people actually don't do their sums. And the accountant, when they present the unsanitized figures in front of them in terms of, hey, guess what? You know, your property is costing you this much. It cost you this much this year. Now, a good accountant will break it down to say, well, this bit's depreciation, forget about this. This bit's your major repairs, let's forget about this. So this is the core holding cost of your property. But generally, if they're not in front of a good property accountant, the whole figures are put in front of them and say, hey, this property's cost you $35,000 this year to hold. And given the rhetoric of more interest rate rises, the other ancillary news that we're seeing, and also the push by real estate agents to say, get ready for the spring selling season, there'll be more listings coming to the market, right?
Mm.
Which is a natural occurrence every single year. But this year, the doomsayers are likely to misinterpret the data, coming back to interpretation of data, to say, hey, a whole lot more listings have hit the market. Yes, there will be some that is purely because of interest rate, but they'll say that there's a huge number of increase, a big number increase in terms of number of listings, therefore the market's turned.
Mm.
And that may not be the case for every single area. So we need to look at what's normal and natural for that area, take that filter. Then we need to say, okay, what's the new pain in that area? And equally importantly, are these buyers that are going to buy these properties, do they still qualify for finance? There'd be a whole lot of buyers that be waiting on the sidelines to get, especially if you're earning bonuses and commissions, to get their group certificates to prove that they've earned that much commission for the bank to take that into account.
Yeah.
So there's so many moving parts that we can't really say that you know, the markets turn down, up, sideways, unless we take a medium or long-term view so that we can iron out these blimps in the pricing of property and the sentiment of property. And like we always say, property is a medium to long-term process. The issue we have is that the amount of information and the ease of transfer of information really influences the buyer activity and the sentiment rapidly, within hours.
I think that's a really good point, because I think the information is there and has been, as we've talked about, with technology, more so than it ever has, really. It's just how is that information interpreted and what lens is
put on it. And how quickly.
Yeah, what psychological lens is put on it and who are you listening to?
You always say investing is what's between your ears, right?
Yeah, the market's between your ears.
Market's between your ears.
But I think coming back to another point Vic made, I think it's really – for the first time in a long time, in fact, probably more so than I can remember, in a really unsophisticated way to describe it, it's a chicken or egg scenario that we have within the asset class at the moment. If we look at the areas that will probably be affected by the, maybe there is another interest rate rise, or there's the mortgage fixed rate cliff, maybe, it will be the investors that probably sell off first.
Yeah.
Right. So, and we can see that in the, not just the data, but we can see that through the general listings and our communications with the different agents, yeah? But not all parts of Australia. In fact, it's quite the reverse in if you look at Perth.
Mm. Yep.
But why it's a chicken or an egg scenario, if you just strip out the investors at the moment and you've got an owner-occupier that's willing to sell or wants to sell or entertaining to sell, the real problem that they face at the moment is what do they upsize or downsize into? So if they're going into a bigger place, there's nothing for sale. If they were downsizing, even if they were to rent, in a lot of cases, it's just as cheap or it's economically the same to rent that it is to keep the mortgage. Or if they want to downsize into a smaller premises, where is it? So the stock on market is really underpinning or lack thereof, underpinning certain parts of the parts of the market. But that could change. But then you overlay the serviceability scenario, which is why we've seen a bit of a spike in growth in and around, say, parts of Sydney. I believe, other than the lack of supply and increased demand, there's a good cohort of people whose finance was running out and they wouldn't qualify for the same loan amount.
Yeah, they've got to hurry up. So the question I got then for you guys is, if there's going to be this increase of listings on market come spring, which happens organically anyway, right? Like, let's just say we're towards the top end, I believe, is the sentiment of this interest rate cycle. Maybe a few more to go. I think ANZ is sort of calling, what are we at now, 4.1, and they might say maybe 4.6, right?
4.6 terminal rate.
4.6 terminal rate. So if you've been able to get this far, can you actually find another? I think they band around numbers on a $500,000 mortgage. If it goes up 25 space, what is about $100 or something like that, whatever it is, right? I can't remember the numbers. So if you've got this far, like, can you cop another 50 basis points, right? Like, is there going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back? But if all this property floods onto the market over and above what would be traditional for the spring selling season, who's going to be putting those properties up? Because to your point, Steve, if it's an owner-occupier having to sell their principal place of residence because they can't afford the mortgage repayments anymore, they still have to pay rent, right? So that might just be a swap out, right?
Yeah.
It's still going to have the same cash implication, but you're not going to have that capital growth implication if you're holding on and creating equity in your home. So it comes back to property investors. Now, we'll chat in off air about the, I was having a first world problem around how hard it is to manage all my portfolio and the fact of trying to increase rents and all the time it takes and all this sort of stuff, right?
Like, just get that boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Which is a real pain, to be fair. But anyway, but if you've got your SHIT sorted out, right, if you've got yourself sorted out as a property investor, things are going to go pretty bad for you to need to really sell your investment property, right? Well, things have got to be pretty dire to sell your investment property. So if you're thinking of those two pillars of more stock coming on market as a result of higher interest rates and costs to hold, where's it going to come from? Where's it going to come from?
The stock?
Yeah.
It's not. And that's the point.
You're saying, right? So the implications of that market dynamicism means that you're not going to get a glut of properties on the market.
There will be certain corridors that will.
But what are those corridors?
I think it'll be where the first homeowner over-leveraged.
So they've bought $1 million property out. And one point, the ponds, right, out near where your offices are, it's like 1.4, 1.5 million for a four-bed
house. So let's do the numbers on that, right, because that's a great example.
That's a good spot.
Yep. So if the first homeowner, let's just call it let's be on the conservative side and say it's 1.2. First homeowner bought during the midst of COVID, 98% lend, so highly leveraged, first homeowner's scheme/grant,
yeah,
at an interest rate of 1.99%.
Yeah, owner-occupied.
Owner-occupied debt.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, rolling off that fixed rate, and this is where the interest rate cliff, hyperbole comes from. So they're going to triple that rate. They're going to roll off 1.99 into circa 6%, probably P&I. Mm. Maybe the wife is now on maternity leave. They've got the cars, the boats, the jet skis, and all the other sort of non-productive debt. And so when you put all those pieces of that picture together, you can see,
it's hard times.
It's hard times. This could be like hell for a lot of people. However, I think compared to the GFC times or prior to the GFC times where people weren't as educated/sophisticated, I think people are much more so.
A lot more. It's a greater today. Awareness.
Correct.
Correct.
I also think, and this comes back to a podcast we did maybe a year ago around the entrepreneurial capabilities of the younger generations, or everyone for that matter, call it a side hustle, call it whatever, they'll do whatever it takes to be able to. So it's not just storm and pack or sitting on a seat, punching data into a computer. There is so much more out there for people to be able to earn, have the capacity to earn.
Yeah.
which is where we are today in terms of look at the jobs numbers. If you want a job, there's five of them out there for you.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going down the path of what Governor Lowe said, you know, go share rooms and get an extra job.
Yeah. But for many people, property investment is their side hustle. That's their ability to be their own boss. And it's appealed to Australians for decades.
To a degree. It has appealed to everybody since Jesus was a boy.
Yeah. On that, Phil, with property investors, right? It's the latest stats, 2020 ATO stat, 2.3 million investors in Australia, right? And of that...
It's 10% of the population. Yeah. It's eight.
So of that, 92% of them own one or two properties only.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is you really, unless you've gone really large asset class, you can't really retire on one or two properties without doing something out of the ordinary.
Mm.
And so in terms of what you said, Steve, in the ordinary punter and getting into the property bandwagon, unless it's a measured, strategic, well-thought-out approach, you are just going to be the statistic. You will be part of that one or two property owners. Now, I'm not advocating having 10 properties, 20 properties, but at least have a couple of properties, but have a strong focus towards going through the glitches, ironing out the glitches of the ups and downs, the harder to hold years, the easier to hold years, and then work towards the debt retirement in your lifetime, in your working lifetime, rather than waiting for something magical to happen at age 67, where all of these properties somehow magically will start providing you with retirement income. It does not work unless you're actually selling down the asset at that point in time. And we're living longer now. So we're now requiring more capital to survive. So rather than working towards, okay, I'm going to sell down something, if we work towards, let's get this passive income happening via mortgage retirement, so we're actually getting onto the rent, the rest is just easy. And history is a great teacher. If we look back to GFC, Steve, right? At that time, we were pretty much what we are in the market to right now, where cost of holding the property became harder for a short period. Then the natural bounce was rents went up, followed by phenomenal growth. So those that could hold on, that had bought the better properties, had managed their money preemptively.
Mm.
So getting the cash flow sorted before you became cash flow constrained, they were able to then go through the multiple cycles of holding onto that property, and the rents didn't come down. Once that went up, it didn't come down.
Yeah.
The second event in history was when we temporarily got rid of negative gearing.
Yeah.
Right. People left the property investment arena in droves because they're focused more on the tax returns and the negative news the media gave as to how much it'll escalate in terms of holding cost. Those that held on, the rents went up. The values tripled, quadrupled on the properties, on the good located properties. So we can't look at this time in investing in isolation. We need to still look at it from a longer period of time and still bring it back to what you're really trying to achieve.
This is why it's future-focused investing.
Yeah.
If we take these small timestamps, I guess, of these hurdles, and there's no doubt today is a hurdle for some, right?
Yeah, for a lot.
But if we extrapolate that out into a greater period of time, there will be a full circle, literally, where the cost of money will become cheaper, it will be more free-flowing, and then when you combine that with, I guess, the stage that we have at the present, no construction industry, undersupplied, greater demand, immigration.
All the fundamentals are there, but finance.
It's all there.
So your position is that there's going to be a period of sustained growth coming to the future.
Dare I say there always is.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
So how's that narrative different than any other time? Like, why is this different?
It's not. It's not.
So it's just a normal market.
It's a normal market. And remember we did a podcast early this year about it's not a buyer's market, it's not a seller's market, it is just the market.
But people get so absorbed and obsessed with this idea going, this market is so different, it's crazy, it's this, that and the other. So your position is it's a normal market. You're saying the only thing that's will probably not be the accelerator of it happening sooner rather than later is the availability of
money.
Yeah, it's the flow of credit, not the cost.
So this comes back to the point. Banks like lending money, particularly in this environment.
They love it.
Where they're getting a lot more, you know, rather than sitting getting 2%, they're getting 6%, right? Like,
yeah,
it's good times to be a banker and probably hold bank shares, right?
It's a great time. But if you look at the, if you go back to 16, 17, when the APRA pulled the handbrake and you saw that the availability was gone like that. So the credit environment just.
So what Steve's talking about there is when they said stop lending money to property investors.
Essentially. Things.
Yeah. No 90% lending. No
90% so you saw the market.
Wobble.
And well, even contract. It wasn't from the lack of intent, it was from the lack of ability. Now, if I fast forward to today where we've got, you know, the 3% buffer rate and being serviced at circa 10% when we want to borrow money, let me tell you that the intent is still there. It is huge. The ability to get the money isn't.
So what needs to happen then, Vic, for liquidity to increase? And on the basis that the banks would like to lend more money prudentially because they have to, they're regulated around it. And banks don't want to blow their dough by that. Banks don't want people to go into foreclosure and they've got to go through rigmarole of trying to sell off assets to get their money back. Banks don't want that, right?
Yeah.
So they want to give money to the people they know they're going to pay them back, right? That's basis of good banking, why the Australian banking system is so strong. So what needs to happen for liquidity to increase? Is it for us to get to this terminal rate and acceptance that we are there, and then that's when the innovation starts happening? That's where the changes. I know Westpac, for example, and some other banks are reducing this buffer of 3%, might come down to 2%. I think they're already at maybe 1% or 2%. They're adding on top of it.
The non-deposit taking
institutions.
I think the innovation, like you said, is already happening. Like your Westpacs, your few of the non-bank lenders that are looking at refinancing, and they're throwing away the buffer rate to a degree.
For a refinance.
A refinance.
Because they want to keep the business, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And they're attracting new business from other lenders where they're saying, I'll service you at this, or I'll throw my servicing rationale away and put a commercial rationale to this to say, by coming to us, your repayments is going to reduce by X amount of dollars, and therefore we are good, responsible lenders. Mm. What I'm really trying to do is grab market share, right? And as that happens, and there's a little bit more surety in terms of where rates really sit. Now, first of all, we need to understand the average interest rate in Australia is circa 5.5% of a period of time, right? You have your 9%, you have your 2%, but it's 5%. Mm. So we're doing our sums at that. However, with human beings, we want certainty, right? And as soon as we are certain that we have relatively gone through the interest rate cycles, and there's a little bit of stability coming in terms of the rate hikes, we're likely to jump back in if we can qualify. The third thing that we need to look at there is the spread. And Steve, we were talking earlier that back when the interest rates were, in your case, 4.99, your rents were lower. Mm. Now the interest rates are higher. But hey, the rents are significantly higher as well. It's only the ancillary and the periphery of cost of living that's also adding that pressure right now, which, again, like I said right in the beginning, investing needs to happen in the background, lifestyle and life needs to happen in the forefront.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen automatically. You need to look at all the moving parts, look at your subscriptions, look at your properties. What are you, you know, what is your actual holding cost as opposed to perceived holding cost, good or bad? And look at what you're trying to achieve. And for some people, it may mean actually selling down the asset to create that little bit of relief, one or two assets to create that little bit of relief. For others, it may be just simply restructuring all of your mortgages. Mm. This is one of the things that we don't tend to do, right? We go with a bank, we stay with them, they jack up the rates, it's too inconvenient to change.
Sounds
but if you restructured everything.
It's really funny to say that because just, you know, we've been chatting for about 40 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And I came, like, we sort of had a coffee outside and a bit of a yarn. And I come into this going, fucking property, you know, like, because I'm part-time, right? Like, I've got a pretty large
He's
portfolio.
He's a part-time lover of property.
But it's really funny. But I'm sure, and I want to understand how you guys see the world, but because I'm sort of part-time. Like, you got, your career is in property, right? Like, my career is sort of in property, sort of not. So I duck in and out of property, right? And you know, it's a real privilege for me to be able to chat to guys like yourself who are completely connected with it every now and then. I'll complain about my frustrations of having to do sort of admin stuff, which is costing me money. Like, it's literally costing me money. I go, I'm done with property. I'm just sick of it, right? Then I start chatting to you guys at the start of this. I'm going, it's property. Oh, God, I hate it. Then I start going, sounds really good. Yeah, you know, and I go, I'm really happy I'm in property
right
now.
We're just good at what we're doing, right?
Apparently. But and there it is.
And I've done this. Right, and there's through, and you can see them on the video. I reckon through this chat, this 40 minutes of chat, I've gone from I hate property to love property, I hate property to love property, I hate property, and I'm sort of back in love with it for a moment, right?
Do you know what it is?
What is it?
Signal versus noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Because other people must do the same thing, where they just 100%. Sit there and just go, you go, everything's wrong, everything's stuffed. Like, I've got to, like, you know, I'd sit there and go, I've got one, I'll talk specifics. Property Mount Coringai, which you know of, right? Yeah. Which it's repayments. It's like P&I, like
a quadrillion dollars a month.
But it's like, I don't know, it's like call it $6,500, right? So I've negotiated a cheaper rate, but it's still P&I and banks, right? They don't instantly go, I've got a new rate. They go, it takes 3 months for that new rate to take effect, right? Like it doesn't instantly happen that month. And I go, I think that's due today. I don't know if there's enough money in a bank account to pay. And I go, I just don't want to have to deal with it. Property sucks. Right? It's what I'm thinking.
Yep.
Then I just go, then I speak to you guys and go, okay, there's going to be a period of long-term sustained growth. Okay, good. I've got a lot of properties. That's good. But to the point around liquidity and access to money, like I have really, really good serviceability. Mm-hmm. Like I could have 4 or 5 times as much debt as what I do, right? But I'm comfortable not being over-leveraged, right? But I'm going through a process now of refinancing all those properties from P&I to interest only.
And it's painful.
And it's painful. And I'm just going, I just don't want to have to deal with it. Can't someone, luckily I've got a good mortgage broker, but I just go, you know, all these, these ramifications going, it's all too hard.
And you know what, Phil? This is why property is not passive.
It's absolutely not passive.
It wouldn't
it's
even matter if all your properties were unencumbered.
Mm.
There'd still be
it still takes a hell of a lot of work. Effort.
Yeah, I'm going through one of my properties at the moment. It's interesting because you fall in love with a property and its performance, and you can quickly fall out of love with that very same property. And I have one at the moment, which has been an extraordinary grower. But for context, 10,000 odd square meters in Sydney for 356,000.
Okay.
Back in 2003.
Yeah, yeah.
Today it's pretty good bit of value. But over the last 3 months, I reckon I've poured 20,000 into this in repairs and maintenance.
Yeah.
And you go through these phases.
Yeah.
You go through phases. And I've got same thing. I've got this property manager just keeps sending me things and going, oh, you got to do this. And I go, I just ain't got time to look at that. Like, and I put it aside.
Well, you do, but you just don't want to.
No, I don't. Like, yes, I sit there and just go, like, they don't make it easy for me. They just go, oh, you got to do this, and this. And I just go, I got a thing the other day. It said, urgent repair on a television aerial. You know, oh, but this is so urgent that we need to approve it. And I wrote back going, it's a TV aerial. Like, who uses a TV aerial anymore? It's all digital TV or Netflix or whatever. And go, no, it's essential as a landlord that you got to provide. And I went, I just don't want to have to worry about it, you know.
The beef of the month was the beginning of the segment, right? Yeah. Not the back end.
Right. Yeah. But the point being,
you're talking yourself out of love with
property. I know,
property
I am already. And I'm back on, and I'm sitting there thinking, I've got this body of work that I've got to do. You know, my biggest issue as a property investor is time. Like, I don't have a day to sit there and do this, because when I start doing it, more problems arise, and I try and do something, it doesn't happen, and there's a sequence and all that, and I just go, stuff it.
But this is the point, once again, signal versus noise. When every bit of media from people like yourself.
Yeah.
And
you say I'm a peddler of positive media or negative media.
I'm saying that you're very, very fair and equitable, Phil.
Okay, well, there you go.
And just for the video version. But when, if you take your hat off and your involvement within the industry in different capacities, and if you're just a person that may have an investment property, maybe a couple, and all you are fed up in the algorithms and the what have you is just negative, 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 and it's going to get worse, it's going to get worse, it's going to get worse, versus you go back 3 years ago and I don't think there would have been an article or a media outlet that was reporting negatively on the asset class. And so you become saturated and just involved in your psyche with whether it's good or bad. And that's the crucial part of any asset class, but because we're talking about property, is to be able to distinguish signal from noise.
Mm.
And that's why future focused, that's why we know the stage is set. Like, I truly believe that. I just need that one little bit of component called money and I'm good to go.
So how do you guys, because you work in property every moment of every day professionally, and you also have your own personal portfolios and stuff. Like, how do you keep consistent? How do you sort of block that noise, you know that you're doing the right thing all the time in terms of property? Or do you fall in and out of love with property, Vic?
Look, I'm always in love with property. Am I always in love with the process? Nah.
No.
And that's the difference, right? Because the reason why I'm in love with property is because I've got a finite goal that I'm working towards with my portfolio. And it's gratifying to see that unfold. Mm. And
but you actually dialed in and connected with that goal?
Yes.
Like yes. How often are you?
Weekly.
Yeah.
Weekly.
See, I'm not, you know, to me, because it's sort of like, it's so busy doing other stuff.
And look, horrible.
But this is the problem. It comes back to myself. Mm. I've got to take charge and control and have agency around my own journey through property.
That's true. And it doesn't take that much time. If you dialed in that regularly, it doesn't actually take that much time. It's just, most weeks it's just acknowledgement to say, I'm an investor and this is what I'm trying to achieve, right? And that takes you away from all of the noise around you. Now, one of the biggest thing and the biggest mistake most investors will make, especially people that have started in the last 3 years, they are likely to see anecdotal evidence and real evidence of a little bit of negative growth in the coming months, right? Perhaps, depending on which area. And when they do, they'll say, oh, property's not working for me. It was a dumb decision. I should not have bought this property. They've lost sight of the bigger medium-term play. So you need to look at, first of all, what's the historical averages in that area? Now, that's just a guide. It's not a template for that's what it'll do in the future. But it gives you a real glimpse of maybe it'll double, maybe it won't. But this is the growth phase in this area. Good example, from the bottom of the market to the next peak, historically Sydney, 3 to 5 years.
Mm.
Melbourne, 5 to 7 years.
On the basis saying that you reckon the bottom was Q1.
I think there was a little bit of a dead cat bounce in that.
Yeah, okay. Mm. So what you're saying, but it's 5 years until the next.
Yeah, yeah. But that's just historical and that's averages, right? Yeah. So that does not mean that we will get, back to the next peak within the next 5 years or 3 years. However, if you look at everything around us, we've got the stage set for some really sustained growth once we get the catalyst into the mix, which is finance.
Okay, so let's say there's some smart people, aka banks and lending institutions, working out how they can get more dough in the hands of Aussies appropriately and prudentially, right? And on the basis that you have responsible lendings in Australia, property investors shouldn't take on more they can afford. What are those things then? Once you've got, or is that the magic of this market moving forward? Is that will be the enabler? But what are those other things that need to happen, or are happening, that you would define that's going to give us this context of a period of sustained growth moving forward?
I think all of the things that need to happen have already happened or are happening right now. It's only the finance that's missing. So population increasing. We've got next level catch-up migration.
Yeah.
We've got a lack of rentals. We've got significant reduction in construction right now. Builders going bust left, right and center. Right?
Yeah.
And also very little in the pipeline in most of the areas where there is migrant population going in, where the pressure is going to be. And then we've got the spread of money where the rent is high enough. And really, when people sit back and look at this, well, we've got virtually the same spread that we had 10 years ago or 12 years ago when the rates were high at that point in time. Overlay that with the infrastructure that's going in and the fact that we are no longer geographically constrained into Sydney postcode 2000, Brisbane postcode 4000. Our employment nodes have spread out.
Yeah.
Equally importantly, we've got a hybrid structure happening and people can work from home. So the cluster of population is spreading out and we've got all of these employment nodes happening left, right and center.
Mm.
It's a stage set for some really,
just
really
good back
growth.
Up property.
Yeah. See how he's
he wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he?
I'm such a smart investor. It's the right thing I did 10, 11 years getting a property and all that's great.
But if you look at yourself.
Great times ahead.
Let's talk about the 10 years, right?
Yeah.
People were afraid to jump in then because we're just coming off the tail end of the GFC.
Correct.
Right? And finance had just started to flow. And what happened? Mm. Boom.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Phil, if you look at your own circumstances, you were probably, I don't think, maybe the beginning of the tail end of the GFC is when you first purchased.
Yeah.
So there was still negative sentiment around. But
I reckon it was a the back end of the negative sentiment of the GFC when we got in.
Not where you purchased.
Oh, no, probably not where I, but at a mindset level, absolutely. But
But at your mindset level, but generally speaking, you think of those auctions we went to. It wasn't the owner occupier there. They were all investors.
We're going to talk about this one day, maybe over a couple of whiskies when I get a bit rolled up and I'll fight you, rums, and I'll fight you out the back of the campfire. You stopped me buying a lot more property back then because it went for $2,000 more than what the reserve was. I got to bought about 50 properties back then, and I'd be a bazillionaire right now. You've held me back, Steve.
Yeah, no,
that's all your fault. Vic would have bought him.
Yeah, here we
Vic
go.
I wouldn't have. Yeah. No, a limit's a limit.
A limit's a limit.
And this is the reality, right? You can't stack them too close to each other.
You can't.
Because finance could become hard all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden you've got this multitude of properties that are all, right, like right now, going into principal and interest, and you can't refinance out.
Yeah. Do you know what, though? That's a really good point that you made, in your sort of, victim mentality.
As
a percentage, like some of those properties that we stopped you from purchasing were, even though they were just
that
thousands
the market falling
through the roof floor, they were like 4 and 5% more than what we had budgeted for.
Yeah.
But if you fast forward to today, that same dollar amount is...
It's amplifying.
It's half a percent.
But there'd be people like that right now, like I was 12 months ago, going, I could be buying properties all over the joint. I'm going to take that one. I'll slow down a bit. Maybe I should have bought more. There's got to be people in 10 years' time going, I wish I bought more property. Am I going to be one of those people, Vic, in 10 years' time going, I could have bought so many properties back in 2023 and I just didn't do it because of blah, 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 blah.
I think argument every decade to 15 years it's the same. Look, I know.
So is this the right time to be buying a lot of properties? The point is future focused investing.
Depending on your financial
situation. Yeah, so take the financial, if you just strip the personal financial situation out of it, and let's just pretend everybody people were in a position to do so. I personally don't think that there has ever been a combination of the boxes you want to tick as an investor come together at one time like we've got now. I've never seen it.
Except for access to money.
Except for the access to money, not the price of money.
So you're not saying price of money is the problem?
It's irrelevant.
Yeah. Oh, clearly it's got some physicality to it. And I mentioned this on one of our Facebook Lives a month ago or whatever it is. If I look at my first property ever where I bought for $105,000 at 7%, during the next 12 months it went to 9%, but it also doubled in value.
No, it wasn't a cheap property then. Right, 105,000. It was still in the medians of that
Correct.
Area.
So this comes back to this normalcy of this market. So like, it's not the price of money at the moment is sort of normal.
It's a little bit higher, a little bit
on the high side.
But it's everything else.
Yeah,
it's everything else that's the cost of living and goods and services. So when you put all that together, the physicality of it is certainly there, right? Mm. But if we could just strip
out
that,
the cost of money in isolation. It's just one part of your contribution you need to make every month to your payments of stuff.
And as an investor, and Vic would be the same here, I'm happy to pay, I'll pay you 24% interest rate right now.
Well, let me put it this way.
I would. I'll pay you 24% now. Because
I've got money, I'll lend it to you 24%.
If I'm going to take your 24% money, I'll guarantee you I'm doubling it.
Mm. Not immediately, though. To realise the doubling of it would be some sort of capital growth orientation.
No, in a situation like that where it's risk-reward, it'd be an immediate scenario. So that's at an extreme level. But if I bring it back today and say, well, you want to be 2% above the retail rate. So let's say you're going to charge, I can get money now for, say, 6.5%. If you're going to charge me 8.5%, then I have a back end of short to beginning of medium term lens on it.
It's controlling the opportunity.
Correct.
Right? And if we
come back to the basics.
If we come to you and say, Phil,
you guys got to try and lend me some money, are you?
Yeah.
take it easy.
So we say, Phil, here's a property for 800K.
Yeah.
Right. In 10 years' time, this is likely to be worth, I'm going to be very conservative over here, a mil, right? It's doubt of an investment if it's only a mil, right? Yeah. But it's only going to cost you, to get the 200K in growth, it's only going to cost you 50K. It's a good deal or not, provided it doesn't impact your lifestyle.
Where do I sign up? I love property. But it's simple though.
It's as simple as that.
So you get caught in the weeds, right? And what Victor's talking about there is you get $200,000 of capital growth and it's actually cost you the real money because you get rent coming in, all that sort of stuff. not, and imagine you're talking pre-tax
yes.
there as well. It's going to cost you $50,000 to make $150,000, mm. right, over a period of 10 years.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Yep. 10 years ago, well, yeah. yeah, probably.
It's a dud of an investment.
Put it on the dogs.
it is. Yeah. It's a crap investment, yeah. but it, like it's in still terms of money. The result, but you've made money. Mm. But you. But the beauty of it is, you know, to state the obvious, you've only put in a little bit of money to begin with because you've leveraged. And that's the beauty mm-hmm. of property. You get to play with big numbers by utilising little numbers.
Well, and a lot of people, you know, and one of the great benefits of the real estate boom that's been is that people's principal place of residence is really great in value. So a lot of people are borrowing with no money down. They're just refinancing it out of their principal place of Correct. Residence. So it's not really tangibly impacting them too much. There's going to be an increase on their principal place residence mortgage. But
and anyway, that's the future stuff. Focus.
This is the future focus.
And it is basic.
So it's good. Property is a good asset class, is it, Steve?
Well, it depends.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is. Yeah.
What's a bad investment at the moment, Victor?
Something that you can't afford.
Yeah.
That's the obvious answer.
It's a bit too zen for me.
I know, right? Yeah. Give us details. I'll throw my hat into the ring on that one.
We should finish this. This is a new thing for season 7. We start off, we're booking it with bad stuff. So all the good stuff's in the middle, bad at the front, bad at the end.
It's like the lollies we used to eat when we were kids, the gooey stuff's in the middle.
Yeah, in the middle. Right. Yes, sir. What's a bad investment at the moment, Steve?
I would personally not be putting my money into an off-the-plan.
Oh, yes.
At the best of times, but definitely now.
Yeah.
Too much.
But you got, mate, there's going to be a lot of fancy people wearing fancy suits, march around with glossy brochures moving forward when you get a little more, those builders that can build, putting up all these apartments to house our potentially new migrant population coming in. There's going to be a lot of people out there selling that stuff, mate.
But I'm going to add to the noise problem in and around that. You know, I know a lot of builders. Yeah. And they're all doing well, considered, right? But I also don't think we've scratched the surface in terms of reporting for builders that have gone into admin or liquidation.
Or zombie builders.
There's a heap there that are just trading for wages and that's just one tiny issue away from, capitulation. So my fear would be if I'm buying off the plan, is my builder solvent? Have they got the ability to finish, not even just finish, but finish on
time.
On time, on budget, or are they going to invoke the sunset clause? Will I be able to borrow at that point in time because maybe the ecosystem hasn't changed? All the normal reasons why I wouldn't do off the plan, but they're just now amplified.
The risk is too great.
The risk is too great. Having said that, and I don't want people to listen to this and go out and do it, I think there's an opportunity. We talked about this a year and a bit ago around the amount of people that went out and bought land. To build, whether it be their home, their investment property, whatever it may be, but now they're stuck where
it's
they can't
cycle.
Or they won't. And so these vacant blocks of land are sitting there and I know—
Which you get no tax sort of benefits from.
Zero tax benefit from, which is, you know, a lot of the reason that people do this to begin with in that sphere. I would suggest, we are at the moment negotiating on some blocks of land, which is some 60% of the original value. On what they purchased it for.
Okay.
In good areas because people can't.
Infill stuff or out in the burbs?
Burbs and, not infill stuff. So not out in the middle of, nowhere.
Yeah. Okay.
These are surrounded by houses and infrastructure. Mm. Now, is there a lot of them? No, but there are some there. But, and I'm not suggesting everybody does that. I'm talking about an opportunity.
I'd absolutely say buy beware. You've got a pretty sophisticated property investor that want to dabble in development at the moment. Like you want to put townhouses on or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's just a standard house and
house
scenario. But anyway, the reason I say that is because there is opportunity out there. There always is opportunity.
Mm.
Always. It's just it doesn't suit you.
Okay, so just closing remark, Victor. Make me feel good about property as we exit this podcast. So I go away and I can retain that until the next month we get together.
You know, you had a beef, Phil, about why Steve didn't let you buy more properties.
Yes.
15 years ago.
Mm.
You're going to look back in 10 years' time and say exactly the same thing.
Okay. And then it's just, they're going to depress me.
So go out and buy some more within your means.
Mate, can you find me a couple of hundred thousand properties out in St. Mary's, mate? Be handy.
A couple of hundred thousand?
Yeah. No, for a couple of hundred thousand dollars. Well, that's what I was paying back in the day.
Back in the day. Well, that was probably 100% too much because I was only paying 100 back in the day.
Okay. And I know we're out of time, Phil, but you've made an important point, right? Back then, we were paying market value.
Yeah.
And we look back now and we're thinking, geez, we bought that well. Same thing, go 10 years down the track, we look back now and say, geez, we bought that well. In a good area.
So you're buying stuff well in this market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How do I know you guys are doing better than anyone else?
How do you know?
This is why I've got to go speak the right property group, no doubt. That's what you got to say to me. I'm not going to tell you, Phil. I'm your buyer's agent, you know. Do something about it. Do something. What do people do when I do that? Like, no one's buying property at the moment. You must have heaps of time on your hands, Victor.
No. We are still buying. Yeah. We're still buying the right type of properties for the client. Mm. It just takes a bit longer today as opposed to, say, 2 years ago. Yeah. And that is the ups and downs of property.
So I would say in this environment, a buyer's agent's value is amplified. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Someone that's been through the ringer in terms of going through several cycles, knowing what signs to pick and having the ability to not, you know, blot out all the noise and hone down to what the client actually needs as opposed to what he wants.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's buy a property, Steve, at some point. We can talk about it on this. I've got to buy.
You know what you got to do? You got to get your finance.
I'm going to sort it, mate. It's all getting done.
I've heard that for 18 months, 24 months.
Six seasons we've heard it for.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It literally is.
Yeah.
Literally is.
Ready to go.
Sorry, before we go, because I know we're at a minute and two now and it's past your bedtime.
Yeah.
What was the outcome? Remember you and I talking the other day, Friday. Ring them up, Phil. Go to the...
I actually did it.
Go to the, just for the listener.
Hot tip.
Yeah.
Hot tip.
Here we go.
And should I name the bank?
It works with any of them.
Okay. So I've been pretty vocal on relationships with banks in the past and the time and energy it takes to actually speak to someone to get your loan looked at. Well, it was a Friday afternoon is when I normally get angry.
After a few wines.
It's normally
so
Steve would always speak at a Friday arbor and I'll have a beef about something, right? And he goes, Phil, go to Google bank discharge phone number. And I Googled it and I got a phone number. It was on a discharge form, right? I called it up. Someone answered it immediately. Mm-hmm. Went hello, and I went, look, my mortgage broker has just told me I'm paying way too much with you, I can get this loan here, whatever it is, from another bank, and he wants to refinance. I had, say, seven loans with this particular bank. And the guy went, okay, Mr. Tarrant, let's have a look at this for you. And within 10 minutes, he shaved a percentage point off my five or six home loans. And I've done the same thing with the same bank beforehand, trying to go through the normal
channel.
And it took me, you can go and listen to it, find the Smart Property Investment Show. First time, an hour on hold, hung up. Next time, an hour on hold, I was livid. I ended up in the complaints area with the bank. There was investigations around it, called the discharge hotline. And it's got, so the bank's going to be annoyed that I've just told tens of thousands of people.
How much did you save, Phil?
I worked it out.
I know the answer. Well, I think I remember the answer.
It was
19 or something.
Yeah, it was multiple. Mm. It was nearly multiple tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct.
And I just went, that's just a win for the
action.
Day. Just taking action.
Mm.
Yeah, it took me an hour.
The right
action. All up and then, but the problem is then.
3 months.
To the point, no, they said, oh, this will have to come into effect, I don't know, five business days or whatever. And then, and then they went, you need to go and manually change your repayments online.
Yeah.
And I went, I don't want to do that. Do it now. And they went, no, you got to do it. So I haven't done it yet.
Oh.
I went to do it and it was like 4 days. And I went, so this is now a month ago. So I've still been paying the same repayments. I'm just paying more of the principal, which I don't want to be doing. So.
Well, whose fault's that?
It's the bank's fault.
No. Here we go, the victim mentality again.
It's absolutely the bank. Make it easy for me.
That's not their job.
I know. Their job is to make it hard for me. That's the reason why they do it. But
correct.
There's a hot tip, Google discharge and just go. And like, you got to be reasonable with it as well, right?
Yeah,
like,
there's no use saying,
my mortgage broker said I can get you this. Yeah, said, like, you know, you've got to give them a rate. You've got to go, I can get, it's in a trust, it's P&I, and I'm getting this rate on another loan, which I was.
Do you know what? It's amazing what
and
you
actually
forget.
Actually beat it.
Yeah, it's amazing what you forget.
Yeah.
Like, we've known that for years and years and years and years and years, right? But it took one of our clients on our private client group who reminded us, who said, this is what you do, to our, you know, private group clients. Yeah. And it just tweaked me.
I'm going to go do some of that this afternoon.
Yeah. Like we talk about that all the time. That's when, and it just happened to be when you were winging up for your wind. Yeah. Saved you 20K and you still haven't bought lunch.
I'm going to buy you lunch now, aren't I? Is the idea.
Are you?
I don't know. I'm told that we're going for lunch.
Happy days.
All right.
All right, let's go.
Let's go. This is set us up. So season 7, Investing Insights, the Right Property Group, future focused investing. I think we've got a theme, Victor, for this coming series of 12 episodes as we enter the new financial year. Let's look towards the future. Let's not get bogged down in the noise and the negativity in the market. Let's be sensible and measured, as we always are as a team, to help shape the buying decisions, investing decisions of Australians. And I don't know how many people you've helped buy properties now.
Lost count.
Thousands, right? So what do people do? I want to have a chat with you guys.
So it's as easy as jumping onto a website. There's a form to fill out to contact us. There is a process. So you don't just jump on the phone straight to myself or Steve. Melissa, who's a very seasoned investor, she gets you prepared for a meeting with either myself or Steve, so you can ask the right questions, you've come in with the right information, so that we can actually guide you rather than just having a nice conversation with you.
Okay. Yeah. Don't be light on the information. The more information that we receive, the better.
Yeah.
Conversation.
Come in, get ready to bare your soul, because you're going to ask all the questions. That way you can do your job better.
Correct.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Go and check these guys out. Right Property Group.
RightPropertyGroup.com.au.
Yeah, and that's RIGHT, not WRIGHT. All right, RightPropertyGroup.com. Okay, I got it.
How many years? Seven.
Seven years. It's the seventh year.
Can't spell.
Still can't spell. I'm not a good speller. I was in front of a whiteboard the other day doing some sort of presentation thing. Horrible. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how bad I could spell. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back again next month. Until then, bye-bye.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature, does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs, and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.